This episode of Mining Stock Daily is brought to you by Ridgeline Minerals. Exploration done differently with experienced management, strategic partnerships, and focused exploration. Read more at ridgelineminerals.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to Mining Stock Daily. We have a market update today with a new guest. I'm welcoming the content manager from SD Bullion, Mr. James Anderson. James, glad to have you on to the show. We got to do some formalities here for an introduction. But before we kind of get into that conversation, I just want to mention to everybody and all the listeners of the podcast that I reached out to James yesterday after receiving an email from SD Bullion and getting the latest video that James had produced regarding the London vault situation in the silver storage. Very interesting video. I will try to provide a link to that video into the show notes here. But after watching that, I was so just kind of blown away. And so I reached out to James, and fortunately, he had some time for us this morning to do a quick update. So, James, welcome to Mining Stock Daily.
Pleasure, Trevor. Thanks for having me on, and hello to all you guys out there.
Let's do some quick formalities real quick, real introduction. You know, what is the ethos of James Anderson, and why precious metals, and you know, how has this kind of driven your career?
Sure. It goes back to being a little kid in my granddaddy's house, finding the junk silver in the closet. You know, that seed of like, why the hell is there coins in the closet? And like, why are they heavy, you know, and all this stuff. And then later on learning, you know, kind of how the monetary system works, et cetera. I went to college in Loyola, New Orleans. A couple of my professors were Austrian economic bend. So they also gave me exposure to alternative ways of thinking outside of the Keynesian box. And so that was very helpful. Walter Block was one of them. And he was actually the economic advisor to Ron Paul in the 2008 campaign. I got involved with that in LA in like 2007. And, you know, really, really got involved in the precious metals, I suppose, right then. That's when I really got into investing and actually putting my currency on the line to get the precious metals and learning really a lot about that market, and was spending so much time in it, like a lot of people probably are now with the silver squeeze, a lot of young people coming on, where it's like, why the hell am I not working in this industry? I pretty much know so much. I mean, I should, and I enjoy it, and I should get paid to do this. What the hell? So I looked for a job and ended up finding one in 2008 in a local area, and went for the interview, and it's like weird interview. It didn't work out. And like a couple months later, I didn't like the answer of not getting the job. And so I called the place and said, you know, what went wrong in that interview? And the guy said, oh, the guy we hired, he's not working out. So come in tomorrow. And I came in, and it was like August of 2008. I had read the book the guy had written, and I was like, the book is fire. You know, I'd read a whole bunch of books, but that book was fire. And I knew that these guys were on a good path just from the book. And it turned out to be Mike Maloney. And so that book hit like borders and all the bookshelves with the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, et cetera. August of 2008, the bank started, you know, failing again in September, et cetera. And so everybody rushed to the bookstore. This is the old school way people used to do things. They rushed to the bookstore and be like, oh, shit, I got to get a book and figure out how gold works. And they got our book, and the phone wouldn't stop ringing for months. And so it was my first introduction to the various levels of, you know, how the silver price, the gold price discovery markets work, how the bullion markets work, how they're bifurcated, how they're totally weird. And it was a trial by fire, essentially. Cut my teeth in that shop, and worked there for quite a while, 6 years or so. And I've been working in the bullion industry ever since. I helped a lot of big major dealers to do a better job on their website, to educate people and not just be, you know, I mean, if you look around the bullion industry, there's some of the worst marketers of all time. And like, they don't even know how to like sophisticatedly explain why you would get involved with gold and silver and speak to people who have a higher net worth. So, you know, I'm pretty crude. I don't try and like, you know, be very soft and eloquent. I don't work for some big commercial bank. I'm not going to talk like a high net worth stiff, but I will just tell you what I see, you know, I'll be frank with it. And so that's kind of what I've done. And I've been in this industry for 12, 13 years, and, you know, I'll be in this industry until this mania goes, and then it'll be time to move on probably. Yeah. But I'll be here for this squeeze. That's for sure.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you about this squeeze, and I had tweeted out last night. It was like, I just can't quit you, silver squeeze, even as hard as I try, because, you know, like, you know, after the big frenzy, and it was a frenzy of about 2 weeks ago, we saw a big pop in silver and the silver ETFs. But during that day, it's like, I said, this doesn't have legs. The chart looks ugly. Right. There's no foundation to it, no fundamentals. It's going to come back down. And I've even been a culprit myself calling it a fake out. I don't know maybe I was wrong calling it a fake out, but it certainly felt like a fake out. But after listening to what you've been publishing, after talking to my buddy Chris Marcus, who I know you are colleagues with, listening to what Dave Kranzler has been saying, even in this morning's news briefing, we mentioned maybe we're on to some actual fundamental price discovery in silver based on the supply and demand of that metal. Maybe this silver squeeze is much more than we thought it was. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, so it feels to me a lot like the grassroots movement of the 2007 Ron Paul campaign. And that campaign was something where we created this thing called like a money bomb, where all of a sudden it was like the biggest explosion in terms of, revenue for a politician from volunteers, et cetera. And people were just grassroots asymmetrically doing whatever they had to do to get the word out. That's essentially what this is. Once you get a tipping point too, it's crowd psychology. Once you get a tipping point of enough people talking like this, it grows. It kind of spills over into their family and best friends and the people they can influence, et cetera. And that's what we have here. And so, yeah, it's got legs. So anybody who doubted Ron Paul in 2007 and scoffed at him, et cetera, I mean, they had to cheat and lie and steal, et cetera, to get him kind of out of the fray. But he made a big mark. And so I essentially believe that's what's happening here. But this is different in terms of, you could try and rig things, et cetera, all you want with derivatives and, you know, showing, putting fear into the longs and the comics, et cetera, by, you know, derivative price waterfalls and declines. But if people are taking the physical and they know that what we're having here is going to grow into a bullion bank run. Okay. It's not just like a stupid bank run like we used to have for fiat currency. This is a bullion bank run. That's what I think is going to develop here, where you have people learning, I need to own this stuff outright. I can't have middlemen. And if I do have any middlemen, that has to be trustworthy. It can't be in some exchange that has questionable acts or what they've been doing for the last few decades. I need to withdraw it if it's there. If it's a depository or a warehouse that's questionable, I need to yank it from there, et cetera. So it's a long explanation of how this is going to go, but I think it's going to, the dominoes are falling. It's going to take years to play out. So get, you know, you can settle in because we're in for derivative battles day in, day out. And we're going to lose derivative battles all the time, but we're going to win the bullion war. That's what's happening here.
So actual fundamentals here. Maybe that's something we didn't have 2 weeks ago. You know, I think we just had like a media frenzy from kind of the fallout from GameStop and Wall Street Bets into the mainstream media. But this, I mean, if you think about it, so a couple ideas that wanted to get your comments here. I believe it was the SLV Trust changed their prospectus over the weekend, saying they disclosed that, indicating that it is currently unable to source enough physical silver bars to back recent share issuance from several successive large cash inflows into the trust. Silver supply demand issue. That's example A. Example B, in which you mentioned in your video with SD Bullion over the weekend, the London vaults, 85% of the silver in London is held by ETFs, meaning a very small amount of that metal in those vaults given the demand for the metal, maybe that's not even appropriately allocated. Right.
Well, there's 15% remaining, which is just roughly around 100 million ounces that you can find published by the LBMA. Okay. There's probably some more that's off, you know, that's in dark places, et cetera. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to run out tomorrow, but it is getting squeezed and it's already happening. You can see it. If they have to change their perspectives, that's stepping towards default. If SIVR is out there shrieking and saying, you know, we got this internet movement coming after the big banks and the hedge funds, like what a pansy ETF commentary that was. You know, these people are just such wusses and squealers. Like you get a movement of people buying bullion and they freak, you know, and they have to go change the rules, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine. Like that just shows you that they're desperate. And in the bullion war, they're going to lose. So that's my point is like you can watch these derivative, you know, drops this morning, et cetera. And yeah, it's disheartening, et cetera. But remember, in a guerrilla warfare, right, you're up in the hills, you're coming down, pot shotting these dudes. And their heart is going to break and they're going to retreat. That's what's going to happen here. And pot shotting means you go and buy bullion every time you get PSLV long, you know, you get Eric Sprott to ram them hardcore by, you know, taking all the bullion off their shelves. That's the way you do this. And you just do it over and over consistently and you don't stop for years.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that you mentioned in the video, I would love to get your comments here, is the issue on position limits and these rules that are in place, but yet are not followed by the people that place those rules into the...
Yeah. I mean, you had Jeff Curry running his mouth like, you know, we have position limits, so there'd have to be all this coordinating to have a short squeeze. It's like, okay, pal. You know, first of all, when you listen to that guy talk, like every minute he says something that's ridiculous. And it literally makes my mind, you know, reel because there's so many misinformations coming out of his mouth anytime he runs it. He said something about 1500 position limit. It had just changed the week prior. The CFTC, I'm sorry, had just rammed through position changes from 1500 to 3000. It was supposed to go into effect in 2022, but no, they just rushed changed it to April of this year, 2021. Okay, they just did that.
Why do you think? Why did they do that, James? Why do you think they did that?
You know, it says they did it. I would imagine that, you know, the concentration that's in this markets, they have to be able to allow commercial banks like Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan to go in and just pound people psychologically, right? And in order to be able to do that, they need to have, you know, larger position limits so they can get in there and throw around 3,000, 6,000 contracts and then turn around and say, hey, we're doing this for our customer base too. It's not just our own house account, right? So, and they also said they can't enforce it until 2023. You know, that's what they say. So this is, like I said, this is a guerrilla war that we're dealing with. We're talking about a lot of sophisticated things going on, a lot of parties involved. And if you believe in bullion and you believe that the, you know, value proposition for it, just go get the physical, watch the derivative price propaganda going on. And when they hit it, when they shoot it like today and it goes down to 27 or whatever, that's when you go and acquire, you take advantage of those sales. That's it. I mean, there's a lot going on, obviously, and to put it and distill it down in like a quick bites, you know, 30-second soundbite, that ain't gonna work. I mean, the market, I'll try to do that. The market has been, if you look at the data, if you go back and look at the actual data, if you're a statistician, for the last 3-4 decades in gold, it's been damn obvious since the mid-80s that the Western powers, being the LBMA and COMEX, have been rigging gold, you know, together. The Eastern price, if you look at Eastern price of trading for gold, it's over $20,000 an ounce. If you look at the spot price, it claims what, just under two. And then if you look at the Western price of gold over the same time frame, it's like starting from 1970 to now, it's less than $35. I mean, it's like, I'd have to go look, but it's comical. It's really cheap. It's like $1.90 an ounce, something stupid. So they've been squeezing, rigging, trying to keep the financial system that they built, you know, looking positive, looking solid. But the truth is that gold, you know, gold should be, Bitcoin's priced 50 grand. I mean, gold should be at least 20 grand. And the math bears that out. And silver on the other side, too, is same story. If you look at the New York hours of trading, outside the New York hours of trading, silver in the East is like $225 if you look at from 1970 to now. And if you look at the spot price, they claim 27. And then if you look at intra New York trading hours, it started in 1970 at $1.90 and change roughly. And now it's a depressionary price. It's like 25 cents an ounce of silver, right? Throughout that 51 years. I mean, no one has been able to explain that away ever. And some people claim, oh, it's just the Indians hedging their gold with the LBMA desk. Oh, okay. That makes no sense. Like the Indians can't hedge during their trading hours. Like they have to wait for LBMA to open. It doesn't make any sense. So, I just find that we're dealing with something that's so big, that's so large, it's hard for people to wrap their minds around it and actually believe it. There's cognitive dissonance going on, but eventually that cognitive dissonance falls apart. And I think that's where we're going.
Well, let's talk about that size, because one of the things you also pointed out in that video was you mentioned Jeff Curry from Goldman Sachs. If anybody from Goldman Sachs or even Mr. Curry himself is listening, would like to come on the show and provide some insight, you're more than welcome. The invitation's always open. But you did show some discrepancies. Basically, he goes on to CNBC just a few days ago saying that squeezing the silver market is almost impossible because of the size and scale of this market so large. And a little 4 years ago, in a speech to the University of Chicago, he was talking about the commodities market and says, this market is so small, it could easily be done to make it run.
Right. And he talked specifically about a time when 2005, when he went into the SAFE China office, which is their, you know, foreign exchange trading unit. And the guy in charge, the CIO there, literally like spat at him and said, get the hell out of here. Like, I can't trade your stupid oil market. It's too tiny. Your dumb little Exxon stock's too tiny. It's just too small. So get the hell out of here. And so he kicked him out of his office. And then years later, we saw oil run to what, 150 a barrel almost. Right. And Jeff Curry admits in that speech, you know, he thinks that the guy from Safe went long oil. And that was a big reason why oil ran so hard. And anybody who knows anything about commodities knows oil, crude oil, is like one of the largest. It is the largest commodity in the game, right? I mean, it's the most important commodity in the world. We need that fuel. And so for China to be able to ramp oil, it took nothing, right? I mean, for them to ramp silver, please. I mean, it's like, of course, you know, look, I have a bigger theory about this, what's going on with China. But I mean, this is a lot of tacit agreements, I think, that's happening with the U.S. Treasury in China. And there's a lot of bigger negotiations on a supranational level that are taking place. But for China not to have, you know, silver warehouses full of silver for their future, to make damn well sure in a Cold War that they have enough so they can keep building products and keep exporting products, et cetera, and stay on the cutting edge of, you know, technology, you'd have to be a damn fool to think that they don't have silver warehouses. And so the question is, do they have enough? Because, I mean, their burn rate for silver every year is well over 100 million ounces. I'm sure there's a lot more than that. You know, I've just done a cursory look, but they need hundreds of millions of ounces in the future if they want to have their China 2049 thing come true, if they want to become the true dominant leader in the world economy. Silver is going to play a huge role in that. And oh yeah, they don't have a lot of silver in their ground. Like, if they go mining, they get a lot of gold, but they don't get a lot of silver out of the ground.
Yeah, they do not have a whole lot of silver in the ground. They do have the industrial component to the metal, but also there is the monetary hedge of the metal itself that is probably also playing a part here, which is why we retailers buy the metal. You know, we're not buying it for industrial purposes.
No, of course not. But I mean, we look at the M2 supply ramping, and the fact is that the math doesn't work. You know, you can't have some odd 200 trillion in unfunded liabilities and pretend like you're going to get a time machine invention and go back and change things or somehow create some new economy out of the sky and pay off these promises that we've not saved for. So how do you usually do that historically? How do you solve that problem? Well, it's either you default or you inflate the crap out of your currency so nominally you can pay off what you've claimed. So at least legally you've fulfilled your obligation. I think it's going to be more of number two. They will default in a lot of ways as well, but it'll mostly be through private industry where the defaults happen. On the actual sovereign level, I think they're gonna inflate the crap out of the currency.
James, one last question before I let you go, and I really appreciate your time and being able to do this on quick turnaround. But can you provide any comments on supply from SD Bullion as far as the frenzy we saw into physical buying over the last couple of weeks and kind of what SD Bullion's seeing as far as the continued buying and continued demand?
So we have an industry that's been suppressed and starved out for multi-decades. So anyone who understands how the refining of precious metals happens, how hard that is, how labor intensive it is. You have to have huge, huge warehouses and you know, a lot of capital to pull that off. So there's only so many in the world that can actually refine silver. I mean, Switzerland doesn't even refine that much silver. It's other places that refine the silver. So it's complex in terms of, you know, it's a small window essentially for this idea that like we're going to have this huge silver melt. Yeah, I don't think so, because the infrastructure's not been built there. Okay. So people thinking that they're, you know, people are going to come and melt their tea sets, et cetera. And well, there'll be plenty of silver. That's total horse crap. They don't understand how the real world works. The truth of the matter is there's maybe 4 to 5 billion ounces, I think, have done those studies of 0.999 fine silver in ETFs, et cetera, reported in the comics reported in people's hoards. I've been tracking, you know, U.S. mint sales, et cetera, all the sovereign coin sales and the private mint sales last few decades. So there's just not that much. I mean, there's just a little bit more fine silver than gold. And currently the GSR, the gold silver ratio, is mid 60s. I think it's going below 2011's 33 low. I think we go back in the 20s, maybe beyond. I mean, this, for as stupid as silver has been suppressed for the last arguable century and a half, there are times where it goes crazy and it gets out of hand, manic the other way. And I think that we're gonna walk into one of those places where the silver market's going to become lunacy, Bill. And at some point, I won't even want to be associated with it because it's going to get so stupid. And so it'll be time to be walking out. But I mean, at this moment, we are still at ridiculously cheap levels. I think anything below 50 long-term is fine. It's fine. It's good store value. I think we go triple digits before this thing ends. And it could get really stupid in terms of how high it goes. But it's a spike and dive metal. Don't expect it to go $1,000 and just plateau there. Unless we're going through a hyperinflation, I just don't know how that would happen. I think we'll see a spike and a dive. There'll be some overvaluation period where it will make a lot of sense to sell off some of your silver or some of your silver related investments and move them into further undervalued commodity plays, probably, because we'll probably be living in an inflationary environment at that time.
James, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Pleasure to talk to you for the first time, and hopefully we can do it again and see how this thing kind of continues to transpire.
Yeah, Trevor, it was a real pleasure, and thanks to all your listeners out there.
How can people find you and follow up with any questions?
Yeah, oh, totally. YouTube, our SD Bullion channel is totally free, so I'd go watch some videos there to see what that's like. I do a weekly market update. When things are kind of hectic, I do a couple a week. I probably have to do one real soon. But yeah, that's probably the easiest way, YouTube, SD Bullion channel, and then SD Bullion blog. I mean, I do a lot of posting of my work there too. And I post on Zero Hedge, et cetera. My Twitter at James Henry And is a good way to follow me as well. So those are different venues you could find me in.
All right. Take care, James. Have yourself a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Trevor. You too.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decision.